This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits. Enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform, Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick the Week podcast, episode 357, brought to you by the Seagate GoFX satellite and iFanboy listeners like you.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone, for the times they are a-changing.
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick the Week podcast, episode 357, Recovery from New York Comic Con edition.
That's a great title.
My name is Ron Richards, and I'm exhausted, but I'm with Connor Kilpatrick.
You know, that title could be used in a show that only happens once a year, though.
Yeah, right.
Which is fine.
It's not a good series. Hi.
And John Flanagan. Hello.
I'm here.
We are tired after New York Comic Con, which kicked our ass.
It did, didn't it?
It really did. Yeah. It really did. Anyway. But we are here. We're back here to talk about the comics because that we are a slave to the comics. We are from a website, ifanboy.com, which is a website all about comics. And every week we read a stack of the books that come out on Wednesday. And one of us writes the Pick of the Week review, heralding the book that they enjoyed. And then we come back here to talk about that book as well as the other books that came out this week. Want to warn you quickly, we're going to talk about what happens in the books, the content, the meat of it. So if you haven't read your books and you're new to this, be warned, we might spoil things. So there's your generic spoiler warning. We take no responsibility for your spoilage. So sorry.
Luke Cage quit the Avengers.
Yeah. What?
What?
This week, Josh had the pick, and I got to say, I wasn't surprised.
Were you not surprised?
I was surprised.
Really, this was the second book I read, I think, and then I was like, wow, that's a pick.
No, it was a great book. I was just surprised that Josh picked it. That's all.
I read a lot of books, but I read this one first, and I read this one early because it turns out that as before Watchmen Minutemen has proceeded through its issues, I have liked it more, and I've anticipated it more with every issue.
Didn't love the first issue.
No, I didn't. And I was really looking forward to it. So I guess it was maybe even a little disappointing. It was just like, okay, that's fine. It just like the rest of them. Like, I was like, that was the thing that happened. But we'd spoken to Darwin in San Diego, and he said he didn't necessarily want to do this at first, and then he went away and he got an idea, and he was like, I had to do it. Like, I got an idea that I loved it, and I had to do it. And that intrigued me, something that was so powerful that it made him sort of revisit what he was going to do. And then as you get to the end of issue number two, which I remember we read in San Diego, there's a thing that happens. They see something, but they never explain exactly what it is. And it's just got me completely intrigued. And as we keep going further into this, I realize that unlike the other Before Watchmen movies, which I sort of comics, I sort of get the sense of I don't really need to see this. I don't really feel like this is a thing I need at all. This one is really starting to feel like it fits in more for me because the early Minutemen figures are so there's not really a lot about them. You just get a couple of words here and there. And for whatever reason, this series is filling that in for me in a way that actually feels right, feels organic, feels fine. I like it. And I want to know more about the moth, and I wanted to know more about the silhouette. And I think the tone in this is very good. And this is it's just starting to feel, you know, like a good Darwin Cook comic. And then as I went back looking at this issue, through the whole thing, trying to figure out what I wanted to say about it, I just realized how much was in it. It was really covering a lot of ground in terms of characterizations of these characters who've been so sort of thinly drawn before. We spent all the time with Comedian in the main book, and this was a bit of his story that sort of fit in really well to describe sort of who he was, and also be, I don't want to say redeeming, but at least makes him more three-dimensional. And the same can be said with Sally Jupiter with the Silk Spectre. It just filled in bits of that, and I like how that fits in with the Silk Spectre story that they're telling in the other book. It was just really nice, and as I went through it, I found myself just liking this more and more the further I go into it, which is exactly the opposite of what happens with most comics. And it's no small thing. Like, the tone is right. The feel is feels correct. It feels like a Darwin Cook book, but it also, you know, feels like it's part of that other world, in a way that doesn't bother my senses, I guess. So, you know, all along we've said we're not going to judge these books on anything but their own merits. You know, if they're good, they're good. That's fine. And most of them, you know, you could take them or leave them. But you know, at the end of the day, it's just a really good comic, and it's part of a series. It sort of has been building up to this being a really good issue, but this is my favorite issue of this series so far. And so,
yeah, like I mentioned, I read this issue, I think it was like the second book I read. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what it was that made it different. Not that the first two issues were less than. This is issue three, right? Yeah, four. No, issue four. Yeah, not the previous three issues were less than, but something was right in this book, and I can't put my finger on it. And like from the opening page with that composition with the repetitive circle design, you know, with whether it's the audio reel or the burning Nazi symbol swastika or the manhole cover and then the sunset. Like, I was just like, that really struck me. And then, you know, even the, you know, the foundation of the 9-panel grid in this issue.
Yeah.
I thought, like, just from a craft standpoint, this was an incredibly strong issue and just shows how masterful Darwin can be. I will admit that I zoned a little out during the Comedian piece just because there were a lot of words, and it was just like, it felt like there was a lot packed into a small kind of space.
You know, what's funny about that is that was probably my favorite part of it, because that was the one that felt most like Darwin, the way that he wrote, like, the surly old captain.
Yeah.
I love that dialogue.
It was very dense. It was
it's super dense. Yeah.
In a world where you've got 2, 3, 4 panel pages, mm-hmm. That's the norm. You know, you've got 12, 13 panel pages here in a way that doesn't make it feel overwhelming.
Yep.
It took me a long time to read this issue, more than most, because there's a lot going on in here. It was really good. I think this and Silk Spectre continue to be what's made this whole endeavor worthwhile.
Yeah.
And it's no strange, feat that it's Darwin Cook responsible for both of them.
He keeps ending with somebody looking in a door that they're not supposed to be. And it's 9, 9.
It's the mystery of the whole thing is really, I'm like, what does everyone keep seeing?
I know, exactly.
And I think, and I believe, like, we're predisposed to want to know what's behind a door and don't think we're ever going to get an answer.
Listen, that's our thing. That's what we stand for. What's behind the door? It's our platform.
And I think that we just think no one's ever going to tell us what's behind that door. So the fact that they might give us an answer really will keep my motor revving.
Yeah. but yeah, I mean, what I think is just so interesting is just how expansive this single issue was across all of the Minutemen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I mean, you got I'm loving what he's doing with Hollis Mason with, the balancing between being a cop and being
I really like him. And I liked him before, and this doesn't take away from that. It only adds to it.
Yeah. And then, tying into the lesbians and the reaction to that, just adding so much more depth, and just like the fact that he was in love with her but then you get insight into their love and understanding why they were together. And then like you mentioned the comedian stuff, and we got some more, Sally Jupiter stuff. I mean, it's just fascinating. It's just, I mean, like I believe this is enriching the source material in the right way, in the way it should, the way you would hope that these would do, and not take away like some of the other ones that we're reading.
The end, somebody's going to look at these someday, somebody's going to read The Watchmen someday and they're going to go, oh, is there anything else? Like, there was a bunch of really sort of silly prequels. Oh, but this part's really good.
Yeah.
Like this is a good supplement to it. And this is all, we're not discussing the politics or the ethics of all that other stuff. I'll leave that for other people because I don't really feel like talking it to death anymore. But just as standing on its own as quality comics, like it's good, and there's no way around that.
Also, the artwork. Yes. I thought there was some wonderful panels in here. There's the when Sally's talking to the gravestones, and she bites her lip, and there's a lot of little, very subtle things that really made the art shine in this issue. There's it's a lot of normally headshots are bad when they're repetitive because the panels are small. There's a lot of talking. But Darwin's faces are so compelling, and then the acting is so strong in it that it makes up for a lot of
that. The subtle changes in the headshots and the subtle, the angle of the eyes, or like you said, the biting of the lip. And it's just amazing to see what he does so much with so little.
Well, mm-hmm. the thing is, normally when I do one of these pick of the week reviews, I'll talk a little bit about the story, and I'll do a little intro, then a little story, then a little of the art. I find that with Darwin Cook's work, it's very difficult to separate the two.
Sure.
He really is a writer and an artist, and if you were to ask me which one he's better at, I wouldn't have an answer for you because he's a storyteller. It's all integral, and I think that we were talking about how dense it is, but you can also look through the book and see where he's varied the pacing that it's not, and the graveyard scenes are indicative of that, where it gets down to one or two words per panel, and some panels have no words in them, and he's letting those moments breathe. And then when you get into the war zone, there's lots of information and lots of stuff going on, and that's all part of the craft.
I do gotta admit, I was surprised. I am surprised because I wouldn't know when it was on because there was no Arrow banner on the cover on the Before Watchmen books, and so I was kind of shocked that they didn't do that.
I know that you were worried because you.
I was worried. I just don't know when it's on.
Did you miss the episode because of him?
Yeah, I don't know. I
had all these other comics, and they were telling me, but.
Well, it's funny. I just think it's funny because I wonder if old DC, if that's indicative of new DC, if 2 years ago they would have ran that banner on these and everyone would have bitched.
Well, they already have a banner.
Yeah, that's true.
Banners would have been.
Lots of banners. Just put more banners. Banners.
Now, moving on to a book that did have a banner on it, so then I didn't know when to watch the show. Justice League number 13, I thought was probably my favorite issue so far of the series.
Interesting.
I think a lot of it had to do with Tony Daniels' art, which I think has a little more life to it than Jim Lee's. I like Jim Lee's art, but it also can be very stiff sometimes and very posy. And I think that Tony Daniels got a little more naturalism to his style, which is of course very much rooted in Jim Lee's style.
It's a really good transition to go to from this. I don't feel like the book suffers from it, and I think you're right. I think there is a little more life to it.
And also, it's not the same. And despite the fact that it's the same inking team from Detective, it's not the same style of art. It was the detective art was much more Jim Lee, very line heavy, lots of cross hatching and thing. This is a little bit more painterly. A lot of that's to do with the coloring, probably from Tomu Murray. But I really liked the look of this book a lot.
Yeah, I was going to comment on the color. I disagree. I didn't really like it. But that's just me. I mean, I think it's just an aesthetic standpoint. It had that more painted kind of color look. And I do agree that Tony Daniel transition from Jim Lee was a nice kind of transition. But I just thought the coloring and just the general look wasn't what I would expect from a Justice League book. Like, I felt like it was a little too European.
It's a little muted,
which I think is great.
It's muted. Yeah. Which I guess is good when you think about it in terms of, you know, challenging and all that sort of stuff. But what I would expect from Justice League is bright colors and all that sort of thing. So yeah, it didn't really click with me. But it's okay.
I'm gonna say something that I'm not sure how I feel about. I think that Tony Daniel is doing a better new ugly Superman costume than most of the others.
Interesting.
Yeah, like it looks okay in this.
Did
like
you
it,
read this?
Yes, I did.
Wow.
I did. I'm not gonna keep reading it. It was really kind of like it was like a really sullen issue.
It was kind of mopey
and dumpy. And was this a continuation of what had been going on before?
Well, they kissed before. The cheetah thing is completely new.
Okay, the cheetah thing is totally new. Now, that's a really good example of we talked about it last week with Uncanny Avengers. You just start the story.
Yeah.
Start
in the middle.
I felt like, oh, maybe I missed something.
Come in late, leave early.
I didn't care. And I think...
Also, the backup story, which wasn't Shazam, which is leading into the new Justice League book, I really liked because I liked the Green Arrow in this a lot. And there isn't really a Green Arrow to like in comics right now.
Yep. Yeah, he was. I noticed that he was a little closer to the mark.
Brad Walker also did the backup, which looked really good.
Yeah, he's coming up.
Yeah. I thought complete package wise, I thought there was great character stuff in the issue. It was a little sullen, but I didn't mind that necessarily. I think a lot of the characters are in a sullen place at the moment.
Why is Steve Trevor so sad all the time?
Because Wonder Woman dumped him.
I know.
And then it happened publicly, and everybody makes fun of him on TMZ and everywhere.
That is great. Yeah. that is wonderful.
Fired from his job.
The only if I had any complaint, I would say that they really made Cheetah quite powerful.
Yeah.
I mean,
they did. Yeah. Well, they got to amped her up. Yeah.
Is she magic? So. I guess she's magic. So that's
she's
the
magic.
Point.
Yeah. That's how she bit Superman.
There you go. It was okay. It was fine.
I really like this. I'm looking forward to Ivan Reis, though. As much as I like the art.
Yeah.
Now, Josh.
Yeah.
Hawkeye number 3.
That was a comic book.
You didn't like it?
It was fine. I liked the way it looked. I was unhappy about the return
of... My favorite one by far.
The return of so many bros. A lot more bros.
Yeah, I didn't laugh because I felt like he's embracing the joke at this point.
Maybe. I just didn't think it was funny in the first place. And maybe if they keep doing it long enough, I will think it's funny again. I liked it. It was fine. But I also liked... There wasn't anything here that I didn't get in the last one.
Yeah, this is the first issue of the three that I didn't love. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought it was beautiful. I thought Aja continues to own and it's amazing. And once it got into the car chase and once it got into the use of the arrows, I kind of like that. But there was something about this where I'm like, this is just more of the same. Like, I didn't really feel as if it hasn't progressed. Mm-hmm. From a series standpoint,
talking about a book that's a series of one shots, so it's not going to follow the same trajectory.
And that's fine. Sure, the thing that was supposed to be interesting about it was his, like, these are the 9 horrible things I did today. And it was a nice structure and it was a fun structure, but it whipped through it so quickly, exactly like it happened last time. I just didn't quite. I don't know. It didn't really suck me in other than like it looked really good. I didn't not like it. I don't want to say that because I didn't have anything more to say. It wasn't a pick of the week. I didn't have anything more to say about that I wouldn't have said before that hasn't been done again.
Yeah.
I think the freewheeling nature of it really lent itself to the story. I think that the fact that it moved quickly was because the whole thing took place in fast cars. And
I did absolutely love that. It was a car chase issue. That is a ton of fun.
And so I think that good looking car chase issue. Should move fast. Yeah, I just think it was funny. I thought the characterizations were great between and the relationship between Hawkeye and Kate Bishop, or Hawkeye and Hawkeye, or whatever you want to call it. I like the fact that he still isn't wearing the costume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
three issues. We've only seen one sequence in the very beginning of the first issue where he's been wearing the costume.
Well, yeah, and the thing with Kate Bishop, I think that's a character who I've read all through Young Avengers, who just really has never been has any depth or any interest to her at all. She's just been somebody there, and you know, she took on the Hawkeye mantle and then dealt with all the heavy stuff that the Young Avengers felt with. Like, so it's great to see her kind of like shining in this, and like actually, and I agree, it was funny. There was the exchange, like when she picked him up in the Volkswagen Bug, and like that was a funny exchange, and it was really good. And yeah, but there was just something about it that didn't have me as jazzed.
The bro guys, like, I just think it's not funny.
Yeah.
And it kept going, and they were pretty much, you know, they were the threat. We don't really know what it is. By the way, Matt Hollingsworth, it needs to get as much or more credit than anybody else working on this. It's such a great looking book.
I will also give them a ton of credit. And Fraction was patting himself on the back on Twitter all day on Wednesday when this came out, but he deserves it for the Hawkeye head covering Hawkeye's crotch. That got me.
That was really wonderful. I will absolutely give you that.
See, I think the bro thing and the Mini Coopers and the numbers, I think it sort of harkens back to a sort of goofy 60s sensibility, which I do quite enjoy.
No, I get that.
And I think the fact that Hawkeye mocks them with the bro is funny. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because I think the acknowledgement is that they're annoying, but not, they're purposely annoying.
Mm-hmm.
So when he shot them with the Silly Putty arrow and yelled, "Silly Putty arrow, bro," that made me laugh because, you know,
I get that. I'm sure there are lots of people out there thinking that's funny and enjoying it.
Yeah.
But everybody's got their thing, and that is not mine, bro.
But I did enjoy it. I just didn't love it as much as I love the previous ones. But yeah. So I got to admit, now that I'm on Walking Dead and issues,
mm-hmm.
I'm hooked.
It's great in issues, isn't it?
It's great in issues. Yeah. It's like the progression of where I went from those fucking hardcovers.
My fault.
Which, by the way, I just got volume 8. But to going to the issues where I'm like, I finished this, I'm like, where's the next one?
Yeah, no, it's awful, but also great.
Yeah.
Negan has a real possibility of being worn too thin, but for whatever reason, I think that his strange personality works really well in contrast to that of Rick.
Yes.
And this was so friggin' tense the whole way through, and you're just like, Rick's not gonna take this shit anymore. He's not gonna take it. He's taking it. And he's like, I have a plan. And you're like, I don't know if he does. This was almost pick of the week. I almost wrote this one up as pick of the week. And it was just really tense and really well paced. And it was good. And I don't know what's going to happen. And I love the switching of the status that's going on here. I almost wish that we didn't know. We didn't know that he has his secret plan.
Well, but we also don't know what that secret plan is.
Yeah.
So. Yeah,
no, I mean, he's going to team with him and become a Salacious Crumb-like figure. Salacious Crumb has not made the show in a while.
Yeah, he has not. So. It's been a while since Salacious Crumb.
Yeah.
I just think the level of drama and the, like you said, the tension, I think, is great. And there's also like a little hint of somebody, you know, like this dude with the mask, the parkour guy. You know, like it's funny going from hardcovers to issues where now the it really is no difference, because I'd read the hardcover, I'd be like, where's the next one? It's just I get a longer chunk out of it. But yeah, this is, I mean, I just thoroughly enjoyed reading it, and I love this threat as Negan as his threat, and what will come of it, and how they're going to get out of it. I think it's different and unique from any other threat that they've dealt with. And it's just interesting to see how everybody else is interacting, and Carl and all that stuff. So yeah, I'm down. I'm cool. So
Carl and his giant man-sized balls.
That I
like that anyway, line.
Yeah. So Avengers Assemble number 8 wrapped up and pretty much finished the prologue leading into Bendis's Guardians of the Galaxy. And the reason why I wanted to kind of discuss it was because not so much that this was so great. I don't think this story was the greatest work Bendis or Bagley have ever done. You know, it was a little chaotic, a little all over the place, a little, you know, like whatever. But it just, I just, you know, find it interesting that they just basically didn't answer any of the questions I had going into it. which was how did Star-Lord get out of the Cancerverse? And like, they actually went into the Cancerverse, and Star-Lord's like, I was here once. And they're like, how'd you get out? And he just like looked. It was just a glare. And then they moved on. I was like, oh, come on. You know, and I know they'll probably get
Bendis,
you know,
in 2012 is not answering any more questions.
No, he is not. That is basically not answering any more questions, any questions at all. But I will admit that it's got me very intrigued about what's to come in the new Guardians of the Galaxy series. And like, you see planted the seeds of Tony joining the team, although that was a little tongue in cheek, because, you know, as they're saying goodbye and wrapping up, you know, Tony says, you know, I envy the hell out of you guys. Uncharted worlds, undiscovered sciences, green ladies. It's like, oh, you know, it's like, okay, I get it, Star Trek. You know, and then Star-Lord says, you should come with us. You really should. And then there's just a shot in the eye. And so you know it's coming, you know, like from what we've seen in the Guardians of the Galaxy teaser
writing,
stuff.
Is he writing him like Robert Downey Jr.?
Yeah, everybody is.
Okay, because I read, no, we're not on the list, but Ultimate Iron Man number one for the ninth time in my life. And it was just straight up Robert Downey Jr.
Well, especially the Ultimate books. I mean, that's
really. I mean, yeah. I was like, oh, you're just doing that, which is fine. I just was curious how it was going on the regular one.
But if I had to compare this to Advent Landing, I still would prefer Advent Landing.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
So are they taking Tony off the board in terms of Earth?
I don't know. We're going to find out because Kieran Gillen is doing the Iron Man book. But Iron Man's going to be in Guardians of the Galaxy. So I don't know how that's going to work. I guess time's going to tell. You know, we'll have to find out. But I don't know. It'll be interesting.
It's weird.
Yeah. Well, they don't care about that stuff anymore. I mean, they don't care.
That's true. They don't. That's fine.
Yeah. So, but yeah, whatever. I mean, it was fine. It was a fine story. I don't think this is the trade paperback I give to somebody who just saw the Avengers on DVD and wants more.
That's what it was supposed to be, though.
That's what it was billed as originally. Then it turned into how are we going to work the Guardians of the Galaxy back into the universe.
You know why?
Really, what it was.
Wow. No one will buy it otherwise.
Yep, exactly.
Well, what's funny is that, like, is Iron Man that strong of a character in the comic book world that people are going to follow him to that book? I don't know if he is.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I mean, they'd follow Robert Downey Jr. doing that, but I don't feel like...
This is laying the groundwork for the movie. So, I mean, like, that's, you know, so it's going to be interesting, you know, it's going to be...
Is that necessary at all?
What, laying groundwork in the comics? Of course it is. Right. The Wolverine origin problem.
Yeah, they want to own it before the movies to own it.
All right. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what they have to do is they have to take the forefront on the jacket.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Or whatever it is, that Tony's jacket is.
Yeah. That jacket showed up was it Hawkeye?
I think so. Yes.
The chick was wearing the jacket.
Yeah. I feel like Logan used to own that car.
It's Logan's car. That's what it is. She found the jacket in the trunk. That's where it's been the whole time, in the trunk.
So, but 48
hours, he had it parked in the garage.
So I can't say a new team on Kelly DeConnick and somebody else are coming onto this title, and I can't say that I'm going to stick with it because I just don't get where it matters, you know.
So, to you,
to me, yeah,
that's fine.
Yeah,
if the story's not compelling, that's the most important thing. If you're not bored with it, then
for me, the story's got to be compelling. It's got to be a good story, but then also when it's in the Marvel universe, where does it fit in? You know what I mean? Like for example, like I have stacks.
That's Final Frontier, from what I understand.
No, I'm talking about Avengers Assemble. I'm not talking about Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, like I have stacks of unread X-Men Legacy books over the past couple of months because ultimately that book didn't really matter in the canon of X-Men as I define it, you know?
So, but you still bought them.
Well, I'm going to read them eventually. It's just they weren't like – there was no urgency around them. So.
Well, all right.
Yeah.
You're that
guy
still.
Well, if you had them digitally, you could put them on your Seagate GoFlex satellite and then take them wherever you wanted. Then they wouldn't be stacks of them all over your house.
Oh, I don't know about the Marvel. Anyway, go on.
The Seagate GoFlex satellite is the only wireless portable hard drive that streams content to your iPad and up to 8 other devices. With a 500 gigabyte hard drive, Wi-Fi access, and a rechargeable battery, the satellite can carry your entire library of video, music, pictures, documents, X-Men Legacy books, whatever you want, to be shared in your iPad or Android tablet via the free GoFlex media app or via a web browser. You can get 10% off Seaflex GoFlex satellite by going to Seagate.com/iFanboy. And thank you for sponsoring the show and the New York Comic Con.
Now, you guys didn't see what was on my GoFlex satellite, right?
This German
you didn't check it out, right?
I didn't go deep.
Okay,
in that,
no, that's so cool. That's all right. That's fine. Let's move on.
Just a bunch of German titles.
Forget it. I didn't even mean to ask a question.
So Marvel Now Point One came out.
That is the worst title that has ever been on a comic book ever.
It fucking did it to me again. It's fun.
At this point, you have no one to blame but yourself.
None.
$5.99. And it's kind of like, and listen, I know I don't work in publishing. I know I've never worked at a comic book company or that. But I got, who are the ad wizards that think of, that put together these kind of books where I get what they're trying to do. They're giving you a taste of the titles. And in this one, we got a taste of Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is not the Nick Fury we know. It's the new Nick Fury, the movie Nick Fury.
Nick Fury Jr.
Guardians of the Galaxy, Nova, Young Avengers, the FF book that that Fraction and Allred are doing, and the Cable and the X-Men book that Dennis Hopeless is writing. So we got a little taste of that, and that was great. Don't get me wrong. Like, the Young Avengers sequence with McKelvey and Mike Norton looked amazing and like has me really excited for Young Avengers now, even more so than my normal McKelvey bias. Like, this looked really good.
He posted a photo on Instagram. It looked great.
Yeah, it looked great. The Guardians of the Galaxy was interesting to see McNiven again, and kind of has me curious about that. Got a more of a taste of Nova by Loeb and McGinnis and that sort of thing. But from a reading standpoint, like, no title card, no intro. Like, literally, you got like three or four pages. You got three pages of this Nick Fury, which is the framing sequence, and you turn the page, and the art changes to McNiven with no cutaway, no any sort of acknowledgement of it. And there's a couple stories of McNiven, you know, kind of telling the Star-Lord origin, which I suppose that's what they're going to get into in Guardians of the Galaxy. And then you turn the page, and then it's McGinnis with Nova. Like, literally with no any sort of transition or anything like that. It was the most disconcerting, disjointed reading experience I've ever had.
And there's 50,000 people willing to pay for it.
And yeah, that's who the ad wizards are. They're the ones who figured out that you'll buy it no matter how often you complain about it.
And you did. You'll buy the next one too. Marvel later.
And I will be honest that the fact that the first real kind of Nova story we see from Loeb McGinnis included Diamond Head as the villain, I was like, all right, cool. He's coming at it from a pure place. So I'm on board.
As opposed to the dirty Nova spot. Okay, I'm going to read a title now, and by the time I'm done with it, the show may be over. Mm-hmm. Billy the Kid's Old Timey Oddities in the Orm of Loch Ness, number one.
Not too bad. That's not as bad as some of those.
It wasn't as bad as writing it out. I'll give you that. Okay, now you may remember I liked both of the Billy the Kid's Old Timey Oddities that had come up before. I think there's been two or three miniseries so far by Eric Powell and Kyle Hotz. Yeah. This one, it's Loch Ness, and I'm going to spoil this, by the way, so... Yep. For those of you listening at home, be prepared for that. And then on the last page, it's fucking Dracula, and I'm not reading it anymore.
Why do you hate vampires?
I'm sick of it. It's just so
We've had a discussion before. How many vampire books are you reading at this point?
I feel like I don't know if this is accurate, but I think it's 100.
You're not. You're not even reading five.
I just don't want to read another take on Dracula, and it's like classic Dracula that I just it's not.
In Josh's there were a lot of vampires this week. I had noticed that as well.
But
there are way more superheroes. I mean, it's such a silly thing to complain about.
I'm not reading a lot of them either.
Well, then what do you want to read?
Listen, I'm just saying if I'm going in for the – if I don't want the surprise vampire. I thought, oh, I'm going to get a Loch Ness story. Oh, it's about Dracula. I just read Dracula. I just finished reading the Dracula story in American Vampire. And I feel like he was in something else, but maybe that was a post on our site. I don't know.
It was a Tomb of Dracula post on our site, but there really isn't a lot of vampires out there.
I don't want any more vampires.
Yeah.
I was suckered in. I was suckered in. God damn it. And then there was a vampire in Chew, but it wasn't a real vampire.
A lot of vampires, yeah. So, anyway, were there any vampires in Dark Avengers?
Mm-hmm. There might have been. I don't think there was, though. There could be, though. Like, there could easily be Morbius or somebody, I think. He'll be in the next team. Here's the funny thing about this. So they switch Thunderbolts over to Dark Avengers. And then they have basically what's two stories going on. And then the end of this story, the original Thunderbolts kick the shit out of the new Dark Avengers, and apparently that team's all done. Next arc, conclusion.
So we're back to the original?
I guess. I really hated that Dark Avengers team. That's what I learned. Like, I just didn't care what happened to them. And every time they switched to the guys that we did like, people that we've been following, the people with the connections, to the old sort of original Thunderbolts. I was down with that, but by the end of this, I was like, okay, just let's stop this. It's fine. And you know, I was talking to people like the Dark Avengers did a lot better than Thunderbolts did, just because it had that name in it. And
that's why they did it.
I know that. I absolutely know why, but it's wrong. Because Thunderbolts was really good, and they changed it. But it was really good for quite a while, and those issues are still out there. So they're definitely worth reading.
New Avengers 31, which is the final arc of Bendis' run on New Avengers, even though I think the story really ended in the last volume. That was really the place to end the story. But this was notable because it featured art by Michael Gatos.
Yep.
So it was the Alias team doing the story of Luke and Jessica trying to quit the Avengers and go be a family and not worry about all the superheroics. But
now, is this a one-off on Gatiss? Is he going to be on it for this arc?
No idea.
Because I think this is if the conclusion of New Avengers is Luke and Jessica, it makes perfect sense for Gatiss to be the artist on it. And
yes, I agree.
Got him. I thought it was a little rougher Gatiss than I remember. But I still totally enjoyed it. Yeah, I thought it was a little rough. His
if
thing
you look
was,
at Alias, it's pretty rough.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was saying. His style's always been pretty rough if you go back and look at it.
But I love the Doctor Strange Iron Fist scene. That was great. Yeah.
No, this was fun. I mean, like last time we talked about Avengers and how it was also the final arc and where we're past AVX now. And it's actually just nice to be able to spend time with these characters, not caught up in a giant story. So this was fun in the same way. Yep. Even though I think the final issue of the last arc was probably the way that it should have ended.
How many Avengers books is Bendis ending right now? Is it more than three or is it just three?
Avengers Assemble, Avengers, New Avengers.
Yeah, that's a lot of Avengers books to be ending. And I feel like we've been talking about it for like 8 months.
Yeah.
Well, we have it solicits ahead of time, that's why. Sword of Sorcery number one continues to be lots of fun, like the Zero issue. This is very much a fantasy, Demon Knights, Game of Thrones-esque tone that I really enjoy that you don't really get in other comics. But the thing that was interesting to me was the Beowulf backup story. Did anybody else read this?
I was going to.
Okay, so Beowulf, we know from issue zero, the backup story in this issue is Beowulf, and it's this Beowulf story. The kids are bringing Beowulf back to the village to protect him from Grendel. And Beowulf's abilities here, he's stronger, faster than everybody else, and he's also able to look at enemies and have secret knowledge of them. So they get attacked by these iron giants. They're going through the iron giant territory. There are these giant robots, and he looks at them, and it says, Wayne Tech, W-34 Hunter Killer. So somehow, this Beowulf story is somehow related to the DCU.
Now, when you say secret knowledge, can he see what's on my Seagate GoFox satellite?
If he looks at your Seagate, he might be able to see into the file names.
I think I gotta clean that thing off.
So the question now is, how is this traditional Beowulf story, is it way in the future? And this is old Wayne Tech that's been used to create these Iron Giants, or is this some other weird thing going on? But it made me raise my eyebrows. So I really enjoy. Otherwise, it's still a great. If you like Zero, you'll like one as well. Ultimate Spider-Man 16. Very jarring transition at the end. Anyone else feel like that happened?
I feel like it happened really fast, but I felt like it was okay because it needed to happen. I know what you're saying, and I don't disagree necessarily, but I don't think it bothered me.
The final page? I'm not talking about him joining the Avengers. I'm talking about how they fight these guys. They fight Hydra. They're sort of decompressing and turn the page, and Captain America has been elected president.
Well, that was exactly the scene from Ultimate Avengers 15.
Right.
Like exactly that page. So,
was he elected president during the fight?
Yeah, I mean, this is what happens when you have an event, and that basically that's what's happening in Ultimate Avengers, and now we're seeing it from Spider-Man's point of view.
But he was fighting during the fight. So when was he actually elected president?
That's literally he was elected a president during the fight. You're not reading Avengers.
I feel like you want to have a discussion with somebody before he just walks to a podium and says, "Okay, I'm the president."
No, he acts fast.
It happened that literally that fast. It's crazy. It's bad.
But what I'm saying is, I feel like Captain America would be like, "Hold on, let's talk about this before he announces it to the world. He's the president."
No.
That's what I'm saying.
He's a man of action.
I'm looking in the issue. Talk amongst yourselves.
I just feel like that's why it was drawing. That's all. I feel like he'd go, "Wait a second, hold on. How did this happen?"
I think that's a greater issue than what happened in this book.
In the book, what happens is he's off fighting somebody in the Ultimates, and somebody says, "You have a phone call." No, he's standing near a payphone, and the payphone starts to, by the way, there's payphones. starts to ring, and Captain America goes over and picks up the phone. He says, "Hello," and it's Carol Danvers, and she's like, "You've just been elected president." Now that's the end.
He just trusts her. What if I called you and said, "Josh, you're not going to believe this, but you've been elected president"? Call a press conference?
She's got a lot of clout in the industry. So now I'm going through number 16, which is the next one where he gave that little speech, which I think is at the beginning of it. Wait, hang on. This device is slow. Yeah. No, it doesn't fit. No, that's not what happens because...
Well, there's another issue of Ultimates
to come out.
Oh,
wait, so it does. No, it does because the first page of Ultimates number...
17?
16. They're outside of the Triskelion. And they're just giving they're giving a speech at the podium with all the reporters there. Now theoretically, it could be directly in the aftermath of this giant battle, and the reporters were like, "Oh, we're just here for a press conference." It's a little scurrilous. I'll give you that. But it doesn't not work.
It only doesn't work if you feel like he doesn't question the fact that someone just told him he's now the president of the United States and he.
But he's not. Well, you gotta understand. No, the world's been at war. The country's been divided. He realized that he needs to.
He knew that. No, he'd already known that because he picked up the payphone call and then he flew back to the Triskelion. Just that between the payphone, between the Ultimates 15 and 16, he took down a big Hydra Legion with Spider-Man.
Yeah,
and then the weather cleared up instantly. And it got light out.
It did. Anyway.
All right.
But I like it, though.
But yeah, I like it, too. I think it's fun. I think it's what Ultimate should be. I think the Ultimate should be crazy and fun like that. So so those are the books that came out this week that we enjoyed. You enjoyed a lot of comics as well. If you go to ifanboy.com/comics. You can do your pull list and come back and rate them and make your picks of the week. And we want to highlight the top 5 picks of the week from the iFanboy community. And coming at number 5 was Daredevil number 19 with 2.5% of the picks of the week. Number 4 was The Walking Dead number 103 with 3.2%. Number 3 was Batwoman number 13 with 4.3%. Number 2 was Josh's pick of the week with Before Watchmen, Minutemen number 4 with 4.7%. And the overwhelming majority at the time of our recording, which admittedly is early after early return, so this might be different by the time the show gets published. But as of now, it's Hawkeye number 3 with 70.7% of the picks of the week.
I don't think it's going to lose its positioning. That number could change, but that's going to be number 1.
Yeah, it looks like Hawkeye is quickly getting a strong fan base. We'll see if it translates to sales.
You know what's awesome? Is that this Hawkeye book seems to be doing very well and people are very happy with it, and it has nothing to do with movie Hawkeye.
Yep.
Yeah. Because movie Hawkeye was dumb.
Yep.
Well, he's boring.
When you say it's doing very well.
I mean the people on our website like it.
Yes, okay, that's good.
So I have no idea how well it's selling.
It's not.
That doesn't surprise me.
It's not, yeah, I know.
By the way, my comment on that is fine.
Anyway. All right, so on to the user reviews.
Man Without Beer reviewed The Zosser of Zilk. Or there might be extra Z in it. The Zosser of Silk.
It should be Zilk. I wrote it.
Is it?
Yeah, it's Zilk.
It is Zilk.
Zosser of Zilk.
I couldn't type it that way, apparently. My body was like, no!
You have a story of 4 out of 5 and the art of 5 out of 5, and 0.4% of the fan base made The Zosser of Zilk number 1 the pick of the week. And Man Without Beer says... If a sentient packet of Frank Zappa brand Skittles decided to take copious amounts of LSD and shrooms and proceeded to write a comic book in a written tradition of a British Stan Lee, The Zosser of Zilk would be the outcome. With poetic psychobabble as text, think less meaning than the most abstract Morrison ideas, this story tells of an ordinary man living in a dark and gloomy world who rediscovers his true self in another dimension. If you've seen anything by Brandon McCarthy, you already know that his art is the closest thing to literal eye candy. You also know that he is the definition of psychedelic comic booking. If you haven't seen anything by him, you deserve to see what else a comic book can be, although I'll try Spider-Man Fever before this. I can already tell that book is better than this book will be.
He liked it.
That's all.
Ron, you read this.
This is awesome. I was so excited to see somebody also enjoy it. I mean, this is kind of in part of IDW's partnership with 2000 AD.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and I believe this is a reprint from 2000 AD. But Brandon McCarthy is just like fucking out there and awesome. And so yeah, this is great. It's, if you want to look for something that is mind blowing and just completely out there, then pick this up and get a sense of what has been going on over in 2000 AD for the better part of 20-30 years now. So
cool. Next up, GS wrote a review on Cyberforce number one. The story gave the story a 4 out of 5 and gave the art a 5 out of 5. Pick of the week percentage at this time is 0.1%. And he says, it is a fantastic introduction of these characters to new readers. I was not a fan of prior incarnations of Cyberforce. This new incarnation of the Cyberforce world is rich with possibility and beautifully illustrated by Coy Pham and Sal Regla. Matt Hawkins, the writer of Think Tank, teamed with the Image co-founder Mark Silvestri to pen an exciting book that was most importantly free. The decision by Top Cow and retailers to provide this book to customers for free may revolutionize the way new titles are introduced to fans. Even more shockingly, the remainder of the first arc will also be free to customers. This is a revolutionary move by Top Cow and a fantastic way to encourage readers who exclusively read books generated by the big two to pick up independent titles. If you are one of those buyers, please take the opportunity to read this arc, and I'm confident that you will be pleasantly surprised. That's one
thing.
It's
not going to revolutionize the world.
I got to say, he's extremely bullish on this.
Let's fill in the how this works. Yep. Ron, you can.
Okay, so basically they did a Kickstarter to fund the production of the first 5 issues, and the idea being that the Kickstarter people who helped it would not only get the book, but then also the book would be free in stores, with an asterisk, because the retailers actually do have to pay a small amount for it, and therefore some retailers were charging for this. I saw it being sold for $1 and things like that.
25 cents.
25 cents, yeah, basically to recruit.
Some didn't carry it at all.
Yeah, some didn't carry it at all. Some stores just gave it away for free, as was the plan.
My store tried to give it to me. I said, I'm good.
I can't say that I enjoyed it as much as GS did, unfortunately. And part of it is because I love Cyberforce. Back 20 years ago when it came out, I thought it was awesome.
When I was 14, it was one of my favorite Image books.
Oh, it was great, right? Yeah. It was so good. And I'm not a big Coy Pham fan. From what I can tell of where the Top Cow universe has gone, I'm not a huge fan of the direction it's gone in. But I read it. It was all right. But this isn't the Cyberforce that I was hoping for, basically.
This is not my Cyberforce.
This is not my Cyberforce, which I get, which I understand. And I just laughed because in the back they had, and this is just petty, but they had a couple pages dedicated to thanking the Kickstarter funders, but they didn't alphabetize it. So it's just literally 4 pages of very small print names, not organized in any other way. So literally, like, if I feel like if you contributed this, you want to find your name, you're spending a while just reading through every name. It's like, it's no rhyme or reason to this at all.
If there was only some way to alphabetize.
Yeah, if only there was some way to. If there's some program that you could import data and sort it.
That's crazy, Ron. Why would they do that?
Yeah. But yeah.
I love that that's the thing that you picked up on. Love it.
But it was all right. It wasn't fantastic. I was a little disappointed.
Didn't cost you anything.
Didn't cost me anything, yeah, that's for sure. I actually don't know. I don't know if my retailer was giving it away or not.
At the point where you charge a quarter, you really.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
come
fine.
On.
But what sucks is that they did show, they showed pencils, which I believe are Silvestri pencils. And I'm like, I want that. There are 2 pages of Silvestri pencils. And I was like, oh, come on, man. So
you didn't get it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, didn't get it. Coy Pham. What are you gonna do?
So that is, that's all the comics of the week. There was a lot of them this week. And so if you want to have your reviews read, you can make sure you go to ifinbar.com/comics and pull your comics, but then you can write reviews there and we check them out before we do the show. So thank you for that. And now, why do I always have to do Book of the Month at the same time I have Pick of the Week? I feel like that's a thing that happens.
That's how it goes. That's how it rolls.
So anybody who listens know that Book of the Month is the most terrifying thing that happens to each of us every 3 months as we try to think, what are we going to talk about that matters, that I have something to say about? And then in the mail, I got a box. And within the box was a box. And within that box was, I believe it's 14 different little comics in various formats and sizes and shapes, a couple of hardcover volumes, like a kid's book, and then some pamphlets, a couple of newspaper size, sort of Wednesday comic size things. And this is Chris Ware's Building Stories. Chris Ware is as lauded a cartoonist graphic novelist as we have today. His stuff appears in magazines that are much smarter than what I usually read. And I've read some Chris Ware in the past. I've mostly, I'm sure I've read other stuff, but I think I've just read Jimmy Corrigan's Smartest Kid on Earth, and I have it, and I liked it, but I tried reading it again sometime, and I was like, whew, that's dense. It's also very sad and maudlin, and that's the thing that I think people associate with Chris Ware. And this certainly has its fair of that. What this is all of those 14 stories can be read basically in any order. I dumped the whole thing out, and I just sort of started picking up stuff. And once I got my hands into it, my first instinct was, oh, this is annoying. But as I kept going, I found myself entirely sucked in by these characters. The basic premise is that there is a building in Chicago. It's got three floors, and there are three families who live on those floors, or three occupants. And you sort of follow one of the girls who lives there through different stages of her life as viewed through the building. And sometimes the building talks. There's one of the stories that is narrated by the bees who live in front of the building. Bees. But mostly it's a very human story. And I enjoyed it immensely. And the more I kept going, the more I liked it. It's very adult. It deals with sort of the relationship problems of people in their early lives and then later on and sort of the cycle of human life. It's got a lot of the stuff that made me really like Alex Robinson's work early on, which is just sort of, these are people in the raw, you know, like if like they're not gorgeous, beautiful people. Sometimes they're naked, sometimes they're not, but it's not, you know, it's not like super sexy time. It's just sort of the reality of the thing. This felt the most voyeuristic of a lot of things that I felt at times. I'm like, I shouldn't be watching this. Like, I shouldn't be in this room listening to these people talk.
Do you have, is there maudlin nature still there of the Jimmy Corrigan?
Less so, I think. For one thing, Jimmy Corrigan as a main character was really tough to get into because he was sort of developmentally stunted and he didn't say anything and he would just sort of go, you know, there were a lot of panels where he didn't say anything. And these people were a little more grown up, a little more relatable. And because of that, I you know, came to like them. I realized as I was writing this review and as I was reading through it, I don't know if they ever say the girl's name. And that might be calculated. I looked around and I couldn't find it. But, you know, it sort of goes through her life and she wanted to be an artist and she went to art school. And that all sort of falls apart and she just sort of lives, you know, a life, you know, that isn't really what she planned, but that's sort of what happens. And
it's the story of most people.
Exactly. And you try to find love and you try to make your life work for something. And, you know, she gains weight and she's not happy about that. And it's incredibly slice of life.
What superpower does she gain?
She has no superpowers. She does have one leg.
Is she a vampire?
One leg. And that's the thing. It's really interesting, I thought, as a choice to make her have one leg. And they don't really focus on it very often because she's got a prosthetic. But sometimes they just mention it, that it goes along with the course of her life, which I thought was a really nice thing, as opposed to making it be about this girl with one leg. But that's just, you know, that's her thing.
Is she the drummer for Def Leppard?
That's awful. I think that's awful. It's funny. Don't get me wrong.
Kind of awful.
Yeah, no, it is.
Why is it awful?
I'm not even sure why.
what I'm curious about, Josh, is how much of your decision around the book was form versus content? You know, is the accomplishment the production aspect of it, or the stories within? You know what I mean,
Ron? That is an excellent question. And as I said, my initial instinct when I looked at this was, oh, God.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, it was. I was like, okay, that's okay. I get what you're doing here. That's cute, but it's way too much. Yeah.
Where's the joy? Let's forget the book. Let's talk about you.
No. But as I read it, I was almost instantly sucked in, and I would finish like one of the pieces, and I'd reach for another one, and every one was as compelling as the rest, and they work together in this great way. You don't have to read them in order. It all just will fit together as you read them. And I thought that was really fun. In that way, it was a really big accomplishment. And you know, just to talk about Ware's work a little bit, I think to a lot of people who read sort of mainstream comics, it doesn't look like much. But really, what this guy does is very good. And he does this thing with pacing where his panels will get smaller and smaller. And at certain points, sometimes it just feels like you're looking at frames of film and it slows things down. And then sometimes they're bigger, but they're all these sort of graphic illustrations that are really precise and labored over. I saw an original Chris Ware page once, and I've never been able to get out of my head because it was massive.
It just haunts you?
No, it was massive. It looked like it was...
Like you wake up and you're just like that fucking Chris Ware page.
No, I was.
He keeps drawing it over and over on his walls.
I know. I just can't get it out of my head.
I was at a museum exhibit. It was the Jewish museum on the Upper East Side, and it was an exhibition of Jewish comic book artists. And there was two things I remember, three things I remember from that. It was a Harvey Kurtzman page from the 50s war story. There was Jack Kirby original pages, which I'd never seen before, and there was this Chris Ware page that blew me away. In that everything he does. You know, when you look at the type and the script and all the design of it, if you look at the cover of this book, just look on iFanboy.com, like he does that all by hand. It's not digital, and it's astounding. It's really amazing. And you know, like the original art is you know, 2-3 times as big as the printed version. And he really does something using that minimalistic style. We, you know, like almost like with Darwin Cook, like we talked about, like he. And sometimes it's one of the only people in comics I can figure out who occasionally you will lose your way in the panels, and I feel like it's on purpose.
That's probably the point, right?
Yeah, no, like it, but it doesn't read. So you read it one way, and then you'll read it another way, and you find yourself coming to the same conclusion with it. Like he muddies it on purpose, and almost no one can get away with that. But since a lot of these are, it's a little bit of sort of rambling of the mind, stream of consciousness stuff, it works. In just sort of the way that all the books can be read in random order work, I was really, really blown away from by it, and more important than that, I actually really enjoyed it.
Do you know what page it was that you were obsessed with?
No, I don't actually know.
You couldn't pick it out.
No.
Oh man, that's gotta be haunting.
Because if we wanted to start like a Kickstarter to get a tattoo on your back of this page, you would be able to point it out.
You know the scary thing about that is that if you were to start that Kickstarter, I think you would make up the money very quickly and easily.
Oh yeah, totally. And that's just like what? That's not even $2,000. Yeah.
No, I know. I'm not going to do that.
You'd have to.
I mean,
we'd use the overage to hire someone to hold you down.
Yeah, I mean, and if all the Kickstarter people contribute, you have to do it. I mean, you can't not do
it. Josh, there was a Kickstarter. I didn't sign anything. I didn't have anything to do with the Kickstarter.
You might want to look at your employment contract.
Oh God.
Or we just knock you out like B.A. Baracus.
What would be great is that we get a back tattoo of this panel that haunts him, but because it's his back, he can never actually see it.
You know what that is? That's haunting.
He's constantly turning around, looking over his shoulder.
Yeah,
like
he's just spinning in a circle like a dog chasing his tail.
I just want to see it.
Oh, man.
So have you ever read Chris Ware?
I actually have never read Chris Ware.
I read Jimmy Corrigan. This is on my list. I'm probably going to hold this off for.
I've seen it in the stores, and it's very impressive.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it really is.
It's bigger than a French bulldog. I think you'd enjoy it, Connor. I think you'd both enjoy it.
No doubt about it.
I think you'd both enjoy it. And you know, don't get me wrong. The form, it's impressive. It's really well done. Like it's incredibly thoughtful. And I think that's one of the things that's impressive about it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you're listening to this, you're like, I don't want that. Like, you know, think again. It's pretty sweet.
All right. So if you enjoyed hearing Josh talk about building stories, go to ifanboy.com to read Josh's Book of the Month review. But now let's dive into email. We've only got time for one email because we ran a little long here. But so our first email comes from Derek, who says a question/observation about lettering. What's up with letterers emphasizing words that don't seem to need any emphasis? It's something I've noticed a lot over the years. A couple of examples. In the first panel, page 17 of Batman and Robin number 0, Talia says, "My man bats have subdued him," emphasis placed on him. Then two panels later, "He's been trained not only by me," emphasis on he's. There's no way I can read this aloud and not sound like a bad Christopher Walken impersonator.
Try it.
So what's up? Is this intentional? Is this the fault of the letterer or the writer? Am I reading this wrong? It's a very good question.
This is a long-standing issue in comic books.
Yep. Bold and italic and bold italic.
Yeah. One of the things people said about Jack Kirby was after he got permission to just do his own thing at DC Comics when he created the Fourth World, those things are just random bolding everywhere.
Yep.
On words that don't make sense.
Right.
Constantly. And it's a thing.
it was really interesting because this actually came up. I moderated a panel with Brian K. Vaughan, Grant Morrison, and Jonathan Hickman at New York Comic Con, and this exact question came up in the use of emphasis and letters, and you know what they said. For the most part, they specify in their script what should be bolded, what should be italicized.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah,
it's
coming from the writer. Very rarely coming from the letterer. The letterer is just doing what he's being told to do. But the style of which that they apply that emphasis and stuff like that is on, you know, is kind of up to the letterer to do, to, you know, how heavy it will be and that sort of thing. Why? So in that particular case for Batman and Robin, I mean, clearly, you know, Grant Morrison wrote it. And so clearly he had a reason why she wanted to make the point that he's been trained, or whatever other words that were emphasized. I don't know. I just kind of – it's the kind of thing where I look past the bold knight.
I don't even notice anymore, but it is a strange anachronism. Of all the anachronisms that have continued, and really there's so many. It's one of the weirdest. I think it makes
–
you could have made a case for it in the 60s. Things are a bit more bombastic in the comics then, but
– it really can work if you want to think about nuance in speech though. Like
it's just
– I think we don't read it though. And then also part of me thinks that at a certain point, the writer needs to let go and give the reader credit to sort of read it, how they're going to read it, and then interpret that.
Yeah.
It's not – I found that when I – my instinct is to use it when I'm writing, but I forget to do it a lot. And then it only shows up occasionally because a lot of times it isn't necessary. And I think that going forward, you're just going to see it as a thing that acts as a relic, and then a lot of people are just going to – let the dialogue be. If you read like a screenplay or something, you can't do that. You have to put the line there, and then the actor and the director, and you know, they're going to interpret it. And as a reader of a comic book, you're going to act as that person.
Well, it's funny because there's so much talk, especially amongst writers. This came up a lot during MorrisonCon, was that, you know, the comics allow the reader to control the experience, and it's all about the reader controlling the experience, unlike other medium. But then this sort of flies in the face of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In a very distinct way, because it really stands out to some people.
Panel pacing can do that too. James Robinson loves the bold.
Yeah, he does.
He does some Jack Kirby level stuff with that.
All right, cool. So if you have any questions about lettering or anything else like that, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com, or you can call our voicemail line at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. Voicemails will be back on next week's show, so call them in, make them good, make them short, 30 seconds, let us know who you are. Always good to hear from everyone in the iFan base. If this podcast wasn't enough for you, we've got other podcasts that you can listen to hypothetically. We got one called iFanboy Don't Miss, where we talk to a creator about books coming out that you absolutely should check out. We took a couple of weeks off after New York Comic Con, but we will be back next week, so stay tuned. Go to iTunes to subscribe to that, or go to ifanboy.com to find it.
You can also listen to the Make Comics podcast. There was one last week and it was late, but it's up there, and it was actually a really good one, because they usually are, where I talk to Andy Schmidt of Comics Experience about some aspect of making comics. It's the one thing that I get the most comments on when I go to shows now. People really,
you got a ton in New York. It was crazy.
Yeah. People really like that. All those people making comics. So, we're going to keep doing them, and try to keep them as regular as possible. I'm sorry.
I like that post-con tired show. Sounds like NPR.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, we're very running with the dude right now.
why did it kick our ass so much? It's Halloween time, so if you are a longtime listener or a visitor of ifanboy.com, you know that every year for the past 4 years we have collected your Halloween costume photographs, thrown them together to a giant post, and put them on display for the world to see. It's always one of our most popular articles of the year. So if you are dressing up this year for Halloween, you can send them in to us. All the information is at ifanboy.com. You can find it at the top of the website, the buzzable bar. Basically, you have until the Wednesday after Halloween, November 7th, I believe, to email them in to contact@ifanboy.com, subject line costume, and then we will get your costumes in the giant costume roundup that takes place a few days later.
Would you say it's a costume parade, Connor?
It's a parade of costumes.
A parade of costumes.
Cornucopia?
Man, I gotta tell you, after New York Comic Con, I love costumes. I just can't get enough of them. I just can't, you know.
I don't think you do.
So you can find all those podcasts and the Halloween stuff, as well as Josh's Pick of the Week review and Book of the Month review, as well as all the other great stuff about the world of comics. All of our New York Comic Con coverage was up, and you can all find it over at ifanboy.com. It's been a busy month. It's been awesome to see everybody active in the comments and everything. So thank you, everyone, for participating over at ifanboy.com. And you can follow us on twitter.com/ifanboy or on facebook.com/ifanboy. And iFanboy Video will be returning with interviews from New York Comic Con. We're pulling them all together now, so stay tuned to youtube.com/ifanboy or onto ifanboy.com or to your RSS feeds to start getting the videos once they roll out. We got some great interviews, some nice in-depth. If you like Jason Aaron, you're gonna be happy. So
yeah. I missed that script bomb. I thought
you did.
I thought I took them all out. I was trying to be a good guy. And then because of that, you weren't looking out for it. So note to self. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or you can leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. For the show, keep it short. Say your name. Tell me where you're from. And thank you for calling in and leaving your questions.
And finally, if you like the show, you can write us a review on iTunes, or better yet, you can tell your friends or your cosplay friends or your friends who hate cosplay or anyone.
Cosplay.
Really?
Cosplay.
If you've got a friend who dresses up like Zombie Hitler and does the Nazi salute all at the Comic-Con, tell him not to do that. And then tell him about the show. First, the Nazi thing is more important than the show. Now tell him not to do that. Don't do it next to our booth. Don't do it where I have to sit and watch you for 5 minutes while you do the Nazi salute for people taking photographs. That's just weird.
Yeah, and then you're in that picture. Like, I'm cool with this guy.
I'm not. I was not cool with it.
I know.
Oh, New York Comic Con.
All right, we survived it. So.
Did we?
That's a good question.
What's funny is that I didn't get sick, but here it is 4 days later. I still don't have my voice back.
The recovery was just insane. What? So, I really think it's something to do with the end of the year and the last show. Just everybody, just it was like a release. It was just
the fact that it was basically the same size
San Diego.
San Diego in terms of people,
but in half the space.
But in New York, which is Anyway, sure. All right. So that's it for this week's show. We'll see you next week. I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I had a good time at the show. I don't want to give that impression.
I
had a really good time. I'm just beat to shit. Will later be passed. The order is rapidly fading, and the first one now will later be last for the time.